Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The question remains unanswered whether President Carter's Monday night address on the Soviet military presence in Cuba has improved chances for Senate ratification of SALT II. The White House hopes it has, that Mr. Carter's announcement of various measures to counter the Soviet presence has eased senatorial concerns. Some senators feel differently on that score, and as we hear from David Dow in Los Angeles, so does Mr. Carter's immediate predecessor.
In a press conference and later in a speech to California Republicans, Gerald Ford sharply criticized President Carter's handling of the Russian troops issue in Cuba. The former president said Mr. Carter had become the first U.S. president to accept the presence of foreign hostile forces in the Western Hemisphere, and also the first, he added, to be stonewalled by the Soviet Union without objections by the White House. Mr. Ford also disagreed with Fidel Castro, who asserts that those same troops were known and accepted by the former president and three predecessors.
He's been wrong a good many times in the past, and I don't think he has the best interest of the United States at heart. So I will rely on the intelligence that was given to me by the head of the intelligence agency when I was president, and at no time during that period was it ever reported to me that a combat Soviet brigade was in Cuba.
Mr. Ford again insisted to reporters he's not a presidential candidate, but he said he wouldn't ignore what he called growing pressure to reconsider his non-candidacy because, as he put it, neither Betty nor I ever ducked any responsibility. David Dow, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Getting back to SALT II, Chairman Frank Church of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee says he is ready to resume hearings on the treaty probably next week. But he still sees a connection between it and those Soviet troops on Cuban soil.
I think that if we're to secure the two-thirds vote that's necessary to ratify the treaty, that the Senate will need to have assurances from the president himself that the Russian forces in Cuba are not engaged in a combat role, and that furthermore, the United States intends that no Russian military presence in Cuba will become a threat to other countries in the Caribbean or elsewhere in the Western Hemisphere.
According to Senate aides, Senator Church is considering a strategy that would allow ratification of the treaty with a proviso that it would not become effective until the president certifies that the Soviet brigade has been withdrawn from Cuba or dismantled. But Republican Senate Leader Howard Baker calls that approach a cop-out, one that dodges the issue, and Baker says he will not accept it. Pope John Paul, here in New York, has been following a schedule that would leave most people gasping with exhaustion. The Pope was on the go yesterday, first in Boston, then New York, for at least 16 hours, and it's likely to be more of the same today. First, a meeting with priests and nuns at St. Patrick's Cathedral, then an address to schoolchildren at Madison Square Garden, followed by a ticker tape parade down Broadway. Bill McLaughlin takes it from there.
Later this morning, the Pope will make another major address. From the tip of Manhattan at the site of an old fort, now known as Battery Park, John Paul II will again speak to the U.S. and, through it, the world. Yesterday, his first day in New York ended with a solemn mass at Yankee Stadium. The crowd's welcome was anything but solemn. It is believed that his Battery Park speech will deal with substantive issues. Justice, liberty, and a theme the Pope appears to be stressing, the ongoing search for peace. He leaves New York this afternoon for Philadelphia. Bill McLaughlin, CBS News, New York.
And standing by, waiting for the Pope's arrival in Philadelphia, is Steve Young.
One of the reasons John Paul II is coming to Philadelphia later this afternoon is to pay back a debt to the city's Archbishop, John Cardinal Kroll. Cardinal Kroll is generally acknowledged as being a key figure in persuading the College of Cardinals to elect John Paul II, then the Cardinal of Krakow, as Pope of the Roman Catholic Church. The Pope will participate in two giant masses during the 21 hours he'll be in town, underscoring a new theme during this part of his journey, vocations and religious careers. Today's mass will be celebrated at Logan Circle on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. The scene of tomorrow's Mass is Convention Hall. That mass will be held for priests, seminarians, and nuns. It is the Pope's way of facing up to one of the most serious problems of the Catholic Church in America, young people turning away from their church and from the priesthood. Steve Young, CBS News, Philadelphia.
Tomorrow, the Pope flies from Philadelphia to Des Moines. Later this week, he'll visit Chicago and Washington before returning to Rome, and he'll doubtless need a rest when he gets there. Politically speaking, the next 5 weeks are shaping up as a hectic period in Cleveland. That's because of what happened in yesterday's mayoral primary, reported by Betty Ann Bowser.
Cleveland's 32-year-old mayor, Dennis Kucinich, is no stranger to controversy. He has survived one crisis after another since taking office 2 years ago. First, voters tried to recall him. Then the city went bankrupt, defaulting twice on loans due big banks. In those days prior to default, there was name-calling by the Kucinich administration, accusations that the city's money interest caused default. And that turned the business community against him, and two, Kucinich's now opponent in the general election. Republican Lieutenant Governor George Voinovich, who handily outpolled Kucinich in yesterday's five-way nonpartisan primary. In the next few weeks, as Kucinich campaigns to keep his job, the city once again faces default. The city's black leadership has indicated, as have leaders in his own Democratic Party, that they will not lift a finger to help him get reelected. So Dennis Kucinich could be facing the toughest battle of his career. Betty Ann Bowser, CBS News, Cleveland.
Voters in Fulton County, Georgia, which includes Atlanta, have turned down a proposed 1% sales tax increase. Under the rejected levy, Atlanta would have collected another $28 million a year. And the result was a setback for Mayor Maynard Jackson, who said the extra funds were needed to fight the city's rising crime rate. Now he says Atlanta has only two choices: increase property taxes by 4 to 6 mils, or cut between $12 and $15 million from the city's budget. Public school teachers in Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, outside New Orleans, have accepted a wage increase offer of nearly 14%, thus ending a strike that began August 24th, the nation's longest such school walkout this fall. School bus drivers, though, were not included in the settlement. They are still on strike in Jefferson Parish, and they're asking the teachers not to cross their picket lines. When radioactive gas first began leaking from the Prairie Island nuclear plant in Red Wing, Minnesota, some people thought they saw a similarity to last spring's Three Mile Island nuclear accident in Pennsylvania. But Bob Fore reports from Minneapolis that it did not turn out to be the case.
At first, it seemed dangerous, radioactive gas leaking for 27 minutes into the plant and air. An emergency declared, a generator shut down, 200 employees sent home. But afterwards, tests found no unusual traces of radiation on any of those employees or in the air. So now, power company officials like plant manager Ed Wetzel are saying that there is no danger and that there never was.
It was in no way close to a meltdown. In fact, our pressure was maintained well above the requirements for the emergency core cooling. It was nothing at all to be concerned about if you're referring to something like a TMI incident.
It will take up to a week before the area of the rupture is clean enough and cool enough for inspectors to enter and pinpoint the exact cause of the accident. Until then, monitoring will continue, and for the next several days, so will the leakage. Even though a Nuclear Regulatory Commission official says less radiation is escaping now than when the plant is in operation. Bob Fall, CBS News, Minneapolis.
Gold sank to somewhat lower but still astronomical levels in Western Europe this morning after yesterday's frenzied performance. At one point yesterday, gold was trading in London at $444 an ounce. Today, it's trading at around $417 and several dollars higher than that in Zurich. The dollar is mixed on the foreign exchanges. Despite rumors to the contrary, Treasury Secretary G. William Miller said today that no further measures are planned to defend the dollar. Miller made that remark at the joint conference of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund in Belgrade.